Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
The revenues from the Suez Canal have increased. So, yes, tourism is still very important for Egypt, but it's no longer the important that it used to be between the year 2011 and 2019.
Growing concern about the impact of the Russian war in Ukraine on tourism in Egypt.
Before even the crisis in Russia and Ukraine, Nigeria has been struggling with internal crisis, particularly when it comes to the issue of supply of fuel for local consumption. And that's, of course, we all know the driving factor behind it. Nigeria does not have functional refinery.
A Nigerian rights group, the Socio-Economic Rights Accountability Project, says it will file a suit against the government for failing to repair the country's broken-down oil refineries.
At night, the villagers stormed at the houses of the Mbororos, and even the mosque was set ablaze because of the anger that came as a result of the death of their son. The security forces, that is the military, had to visit the place very early this morning to carry out investigation to maintain peace and serenity.
And Cameroon deploys troops to a village in the west of the country after clashes between two ethnic groups, the Esu and the Mbororo. Those and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. There's been a reported 30% decrease in tourism bookings from Russians and Ukrainians so far in February, even before the invasion, as tensions built by Russia massed troops along the Ukrainian border. Although, like other nations, Egypt saw a massive drop in tourism numbers throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, there were hopes for a revival as restrictions eased and flights from Russia resumed. Reporter Angie Omar discussed the impact of the Russian war in Ukraine on tourism in Egypt with Alhami Elzayet, chairman of the Egyptian Tourism Federation and chairman of Emeco Travel Group.
The number of Ukrainians decreased tremendously. Of course, now we are just down to 14,000 who are left, who couldn't leave to go back to their country. But I have instructions from Ukraine Airlines, which I represent in Egypt, to reroute them, which you call involuntary rerouting. So it means we reroute them without extra payment from their side, but we reroute them to the nearest country if they wish to do so. If not, they are invited by the Egyptian government to stay as long as they need to stay. As for the Russian, their number did not decrease. Two airports were affected in Russia, but they were very easily replaced by other airports who are operating to Egypt for the time being.
Tourism in general declined because of COVID. And now the numbers of tourists from Ukraine and Russia has plummeted even more, as chairperson of the Egyptian Parliament's Tourism and Aviation Committee, Noura Ali, said. How badly could this war affect the work of those working in the tourist sector?
For the time being, I don't believe it will affect much, because the number of Ukrainian tourists is no longer one of the major contributors to the number of tourists coming to Egypt, because we have other destinations that started operating to Cairo, to Egypt in general. Basically, the German, the Czechs, the British, and even the Americans, but not to the, of course, not to Gada or Sharm el Sheikh. So we have a replacement. So the number of Ukrainian tourists is not that big as it used to be compared to the total. For the near future, it all depends on what will happen in the coming few days. But if things remain without any further bad development, I presume the number of tourists will increase to Egypt in general for many reasons. Number one, there is a blockage of tourists going from Russia to other destinations, from Europe to European destinations, and of course to the United States and some other nations. Secondly, most of their travel is short haul or medium haul. And the two countries that fall within this region are Egypt and Turkey. And the prices of these two countries are very reasonable. Travel time reasonable. The people are used. Plus, of course, we have the opposite of the season. When it's cold there, even in Turkey, we have warm weather now. So I believe that we should get an increase in number of tourists. However, if things turn bad, then it would be tough for everyone.
Tourism is an important source of the Egyptian national income. How would the decline in tourism due to the war affect the Egyptian economy?
Well, you know, in the last few years, we have been more or less used to live without tourism. So what happened to the Egyptian economy is that the number, the value of export have increased. The remittances from the Egyptian working overseas has increased. We have other sources of revenue like the Suez Canal. The revenues from the Suez Canal have increased. So yes, tourism is still very important for Egypt, but it's no longer the important that it used to be between the year 2011 and 2019.
A Malian delegation was expected in Mauritania's capital Friday to discuss the alleged disappearance of several Mauritanians on Malawian territory. Anne Rosenberg reports from Bamako.
A Malian delegation is scheduled to arrive in Nouakchott Friday after the Mauritanian government accused Mali of criminal acts against Mauritanians on Malian territory. According to a French news agency report, a Mauritanian member of parliament, Mohamed Mahmoud Ould Henena, says at least 15 of his countrymen have been killed in Mali. Social media posts have accused the Malian army of being responsible for the killings. In a March 9th press release, Mali's military government said its ambassador to Mauritania was summoned to a meeting with Mauritania's foreign affairs minister over the alleged assassination of Mauritanian citizens in Mali. The release denied the Malian army is responsible for the killings and pledged to investigate the crimes. Malian officials visited Mauritania in January to strengthen the relationship between the two countries after the West African bloc ECOWAS imposed sanctions on Mali in response to the military government delaying elections. Mauritania is not a member of ECOWAS and does not support the sanctions. The West African country, along with Guinea, remains one of the only ways Mali can have access to a port and international trade. The Malian army has also been accused of disappearing several Fulani men in Mali's Ségou region, with the UN and Human Rights Watch conducting investigations. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
A Nigerian rights group, the Socio-Economic Rights Accountability Project, this week said it will file a suit against the government for failing to repair the country's broken-down oil refineries. In the wake of Russian oil being shunned over Russia's invasion of Ukraine, pressure has been growing on Nigeria, Africa's largest oil producer, to increase its production and exports. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
SEREP said its notice to authorities this week to probe allegations of mismanagement of funds approved for the rehabilitation, operation and maintenance of refineries is in the public's interest and that authorities must prosecute anyone liable. The group said in a statement that Nigeria had spent nearly $400 million for maintenance of the refineries between 2015 and 2020 with little impact. Nigerian refineries have been closed for more than a year, causing the country to rely heavily on imports for its energy needs. SEREP also threatened to sue authorities if they do not respond to its notice by Monday of next week. Authorities have yet to respond. SEREP officials were not immediately available for further comments on the lawsuit, but heavy sanctions on Russia's energy sector this month are shifting focus to other producers and exporters of crude oil. Nigeria is Africa's largest oil producer, but experts say it may be too soon to celebrate the jump in oil prices. Isaac Butty is a public finance expert.
If we are still dependent on importation of fuel in Nigeria, it means that there will be a significant issue in terms of the cost of bringing in products into Nigeria. Considering the level of inflation that the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia will cost globally. The level of economic shock.
This week, oil prices hit $130 per barrel, the highest mark since 2008, after the United States and European allies intensified their ban on Russian oil imports because of the invasion of Ukraine. But prices soon fell Wednesday by more than 13%, following a pledge by the United Arab Emirates to increase output in order to close the gap created by sanctions on Russia. But he says even before prices surged, Nigeria had been struggling to stay afloat.
Before even the crisis in Ukraine, in Russia and Ukraine, Nigeria has been struggling with internal crisis, particularly when it comes to the issue of supply of fuel for local consumptions. And that's, of course, we all know the driving factor behind it. Nigeria does not have functional refinery.
SERAP also wants authorities to probe the import in January of more than 170 million liters of refined fuel from Europe by four oil operators. However, the Nigerian National Petroleum Commission head, Mele Kyari, during an international energy summit in Abuja last week, said authorities are working to fix refineries to make the most of the current market opportunities.
A minor disruption in supply can cause the chaos that you are seeing in our street. And that means that those redundancies must be settled. As a country, we must address the issue of local production of finished petroleum, even in the short term. And this is what we are doing. We haven't achieved that. But you can see that the internal combustion engine challenge is a major social issue.
Russia exports about 7 million barrels of oil and gas a day, accounting for roughly 10% of global supplies. Experts say the overall increase in oil prices is expected to boost oil revenue and increase foreign reserves for exporting countries. But they also say Nigeria first needs to resolve issues of local consumption. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Cameroon has deployed troops to a village in the west of the country after clashes between two ethnic groups, the Esu and the Embororo. Authorities say members of the Esu burned scores of homes and buildings after armed Embororo killed the Esu's traditional ruler Wednesday for failing to stop Esu youth from joining Anglophone separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
The Cameroon government says armed men on Wednesday night attacked and killed Kum Acho Albert, the traditional ruler of the Esu. Esu is a village in Menchum, in the English-speaking northwest region on the border with Nigeria. The government said Acho was returning from Wum, capital of the Menchum division, where he had been since March 5. The government said while in Wum, Acho asked civilians to reconcile for peace and return to the western regions where separatists have waged a battle against the government since 2017. Abdullahi Aliyu, the highest government official in Menchum, said armed men shot indiscriminately in the air, forcing the traditional ruler's car to stop, then opened fire on the car's occupants. Nzo Augustine Kum is the president of the Esu Cultural and Development Association. He says the traditional ruler, known as the Fon, was killed alongside his wife.
As His Royal Highness, the Fon of Esu, was returning to his fondom, he was waylaid, and some yet-to-be-identified gunmen bullet his car, thereby killing our Fon and the wife. Others inside the car were wounded. Honestly, Esu is in sorrow.
Kum said Acho's second wife sustained life-threatening injuries from gunshots and was rushed to a hospital in Wum. Cameroon's military on Thursday said the armed men are suspected Mororo youths who accused the Esu traditional ruler of doing too little to stop his people from joining separatists and attacking the Mororo. Pen Elvis is a local humanitarian worker. He says after the killing of the traditional ruler, Esu youths torched dozens of homes, farms, and property belonging to Mbororos.
At night, the villagers stormed at the houses of the Mbororos, and even the mosque was set ablaze because of the anger that came as a result of the death of their son. The security forces, that is the military, had to visit the place very early this morning to carry out investigation to maintain peace and serenity.
Six people were injured in the attacks. The military said it deployed troops to Esu and surrounding villages, but did not say how many troops were deployed. Civilians say many Mbororo and non-Mbororo youths have been arrested. The Mbororo ethnic group has always complained that it is the biggest casualty of Cameroon's separatist crisis. Group members say separatist fighters have stolen and either slaughtered or sold thousands of cattle belonging to Mbororos. They say hundreds of Mbororos fled their ranches and are living in deplorable conditions in Cameroon's French-speaking areas. Mbororos say they are victims of fighter attacks because they have never supported separatists struggling to carve out an independent English-speaking state from French-majority Cameroon. Jaji Manu Gildadu, honorary president of Mbororo Cultural and Development Association, said Mbororos are disgruntled but added investigations should be carried out to ascertain if the traditional ruler of Esu and his wife were killed by Mbororo youths. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Malawi, observers say infighting within the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, may make it unattractive to prospective voters. This after parliamentarian Shadrick Namalomba, who doubles as spokesperson for former President Arthur Peter Mutharika, accused Kondwan Nankumwa, leader of the opposition in parliament, of corruption. He says the minority leader has misappropriated public funds, an accusation the minority leader sharply denies. Political analysts say the infighting for the top leadership of the DPP party robs Malawi of a competent opposition party to act as a check on the ruling party coalition called the Tonse Alliance. For the latest political developments, the VOA's Peter Klote reached Attorney Vincent Kondwe, who is also a leading member of the Political Science Association of Malawi.
There is an element of the founder syndrome whereby once someone starts a political party, they would want that the ear to their leadership must flow from their family or someone directly connected to their family tree. So when you look at the DPP, when former President Professor Bingu Wamtarika established the DPP, the one who next came in line was his younger brother, President Peter Mutharika. And now after Peter Mutharika lost power, he would prefer to have someone very close. And as you know, Peter Mutharika does not have his children in Malawi. So he would prefer that someone who must succeed him must be somebody who is very close to him and has got family ties to him.
Vincent, if that is the thinking, doesn't that limit the attraction of the party for all Malawians across the country to support, especially when they need this in order to win back political power in a few years?
That is the most surprising aspect of it, because the history has taught us that Malawians do not want family political parties. We had the Alliance for Democracy, which was led by the late second vice president, Tom Chakufo Chihana. This was a very vibrant party, which was in the forefront fighting for multi-party democracy. In 1994, it had almost 36 members of parliament. But now, as I'm speaking, it only has what, one member of parliament. The reason is that after the death of the founding president of the Alliance for Democracy, the one who succeeded him is his son, Enoch Shihana. And then we have another scenario of the United Democratic Front Party, which was the political party that ruled Malawi after multi-party democracy in 1994 up until 2004. But when you're looking at, this was a political party that had more than 130 members of parliament at some point. But now, if I'm not mistaken, it has only about 8 or 9 members of parliament. But the major problem that the United Democratic Front Party has is that Bakiri Mulunzi, our former president, who was at the helm of the UDF from 1994 up to around 2008, was his son, Atsperi Mulunzi, who succeeded him to be the leader of the United Democratic Front. Apparently, to show that people don't want that political parties, political leadership to just come from within the family, the son of the of Bakiri Mulunzi, Atsperi Mulunzi, lost his position as a member of parliament.
So, Vizier, what do you think the DPP can do to heal this rift?
Internal disagreements or intra-party conflicts are necessary ingredients for the growth and development of political party institutionalization. However, when these conflicts disintegrate the political party to the extent that it becomes a dysfunctional organization, it renders itself irrelevant within the governance framework that Malawi is a friend, is framed along those lines. So what they need to do is to focus more on national interest other than the individual jockeying for political power to lead the party. Because as a political party, they are an alternative government. They are a government in waiting. And as it stands, the DPP is the only visible opposition political party that can provide the opposition to the Tutsi Alliance government. Now, if they continue pulling in different directions, come 2025, I am of the opinion that they will not be ready to stand and offer significant opposition to the Tutsi Alliance or to the Malawi Congress Party, whatever becomes in 2025. So as they approach 2025, I don't see that the DPP will provide a strong front and a candidate who can competitively compete in the 2025 presidential election.
That was Attorney Vincent Kondwe, leading member of the Political Science Association of Malawi. He spoke with my colleague Peter Kloti. Justice Raymond Zondo is now the new Chief Justice of South Africa. President Cyril Ramaphosa appointed Zondo to take the reins from Magoeng Magoeng, who retired this year when his term expired. Zondo impressed many people as the chairperson of a commission that investigated corruption. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South Africans have welcomed Zondo's appointment to the highest judicial office in the land. Observers say Zondo demonstrated his professionalism and impartiality during his role as the chairperson of the Commission of Inquiry that investigated corruption, where he made sure politicians account for their actions. He has since recommended that several of them be criminally charged. When former President Jacob Zuma refused to appear before his commission, Zondo approached the courts leading to Zuma's arrest and imprisonment. Speaking to the media, Democratic Alliance Party leader John Steenhuisen welcomed the appointment.
I think he did make the right choice, and I think it was a safe pair of hands that he's chosen in Judge Raymond Zondo. I think Judge Zondo has a very clear track record of showing no fear or favour in the fight against corruption and maladministration.
Many ordinary South Africans have also given thumbs up to the appointment. Marcia Zali told VOA that Zondo has demonstrated beyond measure that he can be trusted to guard the country's constitution.
He was the deputy chief justice, and he had been acting in that capacity since Mogoeng Mogoeng went on leave and subsequently left. So for me, I think his appointment makes sense.
However, not all South Africans are in agreement. The Economic Freedom Fighters Party accused President Cyril Ramaphosa of rewarding Zondo for failing to offer tough questions when he appeared before his commission. Legal experts argue that Section 174(3) of the Constitution empowers the president to make that choice, and that is exactly what he did. Political analyst Tiniko Maluleke told VOA that there was nothing political about Zondo's appointment.
In the ideal world, this is how things happen, that the Deputy Chief Justice becomes the next Chief Justice.
The Judicial Service Commission had recommended a female candidate, Judge Mandisa Meyer, but that selection process was heavily criticized by many who saw it as biased and politicized. Recently, there have been some who have criticized the judiciary in South Africa as being captured by politicians. This is a notion which Justice Raymond Zondo openly disagreed with when it was raised by a senior member of the ruling African National Congress. He is expected to start his duties on the 1st of April. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Netland Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And it's now time for our Saturday Music Spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
nashikilia mwacha vime pichwa wallahi kanipatia anastahili sifa chumba kizima chanukia uturi kajifisha vidore nasimamia ukingoni nafikishwa nani kosha mwili kwa maji ya madafu yendo kocha ananifunza kucheza rafu anijua tumbo la ngiri kwa mafuta ya karafu nikichoka ananikanda kwa mabarafu majabu majabu penzi lake lajabu majabu majabu mahaba yake ajabu majabu majabu penzi lake lajabu majabu majabu mahaba yake ajabu Paka harua, mikono tende anazichambua, anilamba Kitandani humwaga maua, mingile hata chembe siku anajua, antoa ushamba Nalitake nini kwake, nyombe sipewe Iwe pemba machake chake, chakwe mwenyewe Mboshe gani mwake mwake, mangaka msewe Libandike, penzi kama gazeti walisome Tuadabishe, sangara shombo vipweti tuamone Nikila nilishe, chapati za alizeti ninone Tuafungishe, midomo uzi simenti tuashone Nani kosha mwili, kwa maji ya madafu Yendo kocha, nana nifunza kucheza rafu Anijua tumbo la ngiri kwa mafuta ya karafu Nikichoka, ananikanda kwa mabarafu Majabu, majabu, penzi lake lajabu Majabu, majabu, mahaba yake ajabu Majabu, majabu, penzi lake lajabu Majabu, majabu mahaba yake ya jamu Halua, halua Unipa vitamu laini laini Halua, halua Kinyama cha ham uhondo utosini Halua, halua Sili kwa kijiko nalishwa kwa ulimi Halua, halua Nitake ni
love so sweet like honey. Anywhere you go, I go follow. I no go ever let you go. After all the way I put you through, you stand by me on your mind. Your friends them say let him go, but you keep saying no, no. Waiting me, I do me, I don't know. Your love for me, they can pay, can pay. When I need someone, to hold me tight, all through the night, show me love, pay my side. Baby, I dare.
Yeah, Tanya, also Sango Munalu. Your love is a bomb. You make me surrender, won't put in panic. So tell me tonight. Oh, Sanya, so much, I don't tell me about it. I call you my baby. Oh, Zinia, my soul. I can see all these other guys. Night and day, baby, told you why. Zen cooling that and over. In a dance of face, you're my everything. Everything.
Chisange
That was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight. And join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpoga.